Here is an interesting podcast recording of an event held 2 years ago at the Canfor Pro Conference. It was the most embarrassing, humbling, confusing, yet enlightening experiences I've had in my life. It was a letdown at the same time as it was an inspiration. It was definitely a failure that brought us closer together. And it was this kind of event, moment, that galvanized my belief in community and in the support from my peers that came back with karma from all the dedication that I put forward. It was demonstrated here when we stuck it out in front of an audience of very, very little and helped push us forward to a place where we are now, where we can all look back, proud, laugh about it, and realize how important being vulnerable and just supporting each other was and continue to be for all of us, whether it be in our professional careers or our personal lives. It's very, very important to remember that when people are doing good work, you do it with your heart. There are others who are willing to step up to support and contribute. I hope you enjoy this hidden and never before heard and seen podcast panelist presentation by 2.0 Toronto.
You don't see anyone?
No.
You don't see black and white image?
Oh, shoot. Hi.
Move a little further over towards Will, and you'll pop out of the
I see.
Because you're on the edge, basically. So it's a feature that when you get outside of like a safe zone,
yeah,
it shows you the world so you don't like
fall off the edge of it.
Right, yeah.
Or
oh,
to, like,
my God.
Movie,
that was so freaky.
It's cool that it's cordless, because usually there's...
Jesus.
They're all...
You don't need a computer.
Well, it's like... You're literally
that's
opening
amazing.
Up a little window, and it's like, hi.
And
that was a weird motion to
get smaller and smaller.
Do we look cooler? Glasses and then
or scarier.
In the
head,
stick
yeah.
it right in.
Wow.
But so, oh, yeah, there you are. Now
what
I see
do
you.
You see, Lauren?
Hold on.
Hi.
Hi.
Did you just open a window?
It's actually what that is. It's like I'm still in the mindshare space, and then all of a sudden I'm like, hello.
I have to try this out.
Let's begin.
So thank you guys for coming. My name is Julian. This is our 2.0 panelist piece, but we're going to do a little bit of a remix on what this is all about. Just to start with a definition of what we are and what we do. 2.0 is a peer-to-peer platform for personal growth and professional development. So the goal with this was a six to seven year effort spawned with the question, and usually questions like, what problem are you trying to solve? That's the big question. And the big question that I had and the answer for that in the beginning about 2012, 2013 was a lack of peer-to-peer connection. And where are there opportunities for more connection? The solution that I thought about was how to create elevated connection experiences for people that go beyond the classroom, that go beyond the conference room, that are more than the conventional. Something more conscious, something with more care, and something with community. So today, just to run down of what we're going to do today in segments, each of us will rotate as moderator to ask each other questions. And from there, we will kind of take a spin on the traditional panelist approach to how we share information. So here's the start and a brief history of what 2.0 was. It started with a summit, which was aimed at becoming the TED Talks of group fitness. Then I designed a new format called the Masterclass, and that basically made the summit more intimate and more interactive. It was a workshop for working out first and then working in. Then another format that I designed was called the Mindshare, and it's a smaller version of a TED Talks. I call it a boutique TED Talks. Both Masterclass and Mindshare formats bring that intimacy and interactiveness to the experiential playground of events. Now the latest format is a Mastermind podcast. So at the same time that we're presenting live, offline, we're also doing things that are online. So there's recordings, there's a camera here. All the things that we're saying right now is also being recorded for podcasts for the future. So if you're looking for notes, I can send you a PDF of this later on, but you'll be able to hear the audio while you're on your streetcar or your commute and whatnot. It's just bridging the gap between the offline and the online experience. The method that resonates over time and the methodology that we put together to curate these experiences and make them successful is predominantly holistic, hybrid, and heart-centric. Those are the three H words that have stuck with me since the beginning. Hybrid in that leaders of our time are not just looking inwards into their fields for information and innovation, they're looking outwards for inspiration. They're also heart-centric. You can tell when someone's doing it for money, when someone's doing it for ulterior motives. You can also tell when someone's doing it from the heart, from passion. And so that's always been a part of me and also a part of who I choose to partner and work with, because I can tell that they're doing it from a much deeper place. And then holistic is an environment that caters to all that we are as human beings. The next level of what we do is philanthropy. We want to share what we do and put it forward by donating our proceeds to charity. So all of our events and the tickets that we sort of receive, that goes to a charity of our choice. And last year was Holland Bloorview Kids Hospital. The learning environment speaks to the holistic approach to what we do. The word that I think best represents fitness, health, and wellness, when people ask, so what industry are you in? Well, I'm in fitness, health, and wellness. I thought of the word vitality. I think that best represents what I want to put forward in the future of what I teach. So vitality coaching is definitely where we're at. There's a certain level of embodied learning that touches those that are more kinesthetic based. Also, social learning through networking, but there's other ways of interpreting networking. Instead of just an exchange of business cards, it's how do we share stories of success, failure, how do we connect, how do we collaborate, how do we cross-pollinate and create ideas and experiences that go beyond just the business relation. And then to further the holistic approach is how we learn and how we educate others. And I think it comes as being not just a teacher, but also a continual, perpetual student. So if we connect all those three things together, that creates an elevated connection experience. That's the methodology that I've sort of thought about over time. It just didn't come like that. It came over time, experimentation, failures, lots of listening to feedback, being as much of a listener than a doer. My inspirations for 2.0 has come from the man, Paul Check. The I We All principle is what's guided the brainchild birth of 2.0 and where it is now. We're in a phase of we. I think today represents a chapter closing of 2.0, the I. Developing the identity of what 2.0 is and what it does. But now how do we shift gears and make it a we project? And that's why there's a panelist here. There's people who represent not just the fitness world, but beyond. We'll do a quick rundown of everyone here and their backgrounds. But my sights are outwards. What's out beyond the fitness circle and wellness circle and health circle? And how can we take these experts and bring them here to improve the industry? The main inspiration that I've taken from this year is the fourth quote, Antoine de Saint-Exupéry. He's the author of Le Petit Prince. Love does not consist of gazing at each other, which we can do all day, but in looking outward together in the same direction. And I think we all sit here together looking outwards in the same direction. I think that's a very important thing when it comes to an industry. We don't see that very often. There's a lot of people looking in different directions, looking at each other, looking back, looking forward, looking up, looking out, looking in. But if we're connected, we're all going towards the same direction. I think we all, at the end of the day, as human beings, we want the same thing, and we know that deep down. Our deeper why, we have three main taglines or mottos. Collaboration is the new continuing education. I think there's not enough of that. And that started about 3-4 years ago. Connection is the new currency. So Seth Godin talks about the connection economy. And then stewardship is the new leadership. Instead of leading in the front of the pack and telling people what to do, dictating how things are, how things should be, we should be stewards, cultivating, walking hand in hand beside each other, maybe even from the back of the pack too. So here's our panelists. As you can tell, we have a wide scope of amazing individuals here today. I'll just get each person to do a rundown quick of who they are, with their name and then background. And then we'll start with the interesting thing about today's moderation is that it's going to be a rotational moderation. So it seems as though I'm the moderator right now, but I'm going to shift the hat to each person and have them ask the questions, changing it up, making it a 2.0 panelist, a panelist 2.0, next level of what a panelist could be. Okay, so let's start off down the line here.
My name is Paluna, and I have a pretty weird, eclectic background. My dad was a yoga teacher, so I was introduced to the practice of yoga and meditation since the age of 6 years old. But I was always interested in sports and fitness, so I used meditation and yoga to calm my mind because I was a crazy, anxious child. And sports and fitness to feed that other need for the physical. So my entire life, I've experimented with every discipline you can possibly imagine. I tell myself to study everything. I decide to study for a minimum of a year, so I understand it well. So every discipline I practice full time for a minimum of a year. There is a few other ones that I've done for over 6 or 5 years, but that's basically the approach I take to learning. And I think that's it. And I'm really excited to have you all here.
I'm Cecily. I have always been an active person. Growing up, I was mostly involved in the worlds of dance and gymnastics, and then in university, I found yoga and made it my entire world. And in doing so, I ended up becoming quite injured because there wasn't enough diversity in my movement practice, and those injuries led me down the road to a better education. And it was a self-directed education where I just tried to learn from as many different people as I could through a period of about 4 years. And now I run a company called Yoga Detour, which takes that information that I took in, that I'm still taking in, and tries to integrate that into the yoga world for people who, like me, do a lot of yoga but likely need to be doing other things as well. So I have kind of steered the direction of our company toward that specifically with regard to yoga teachers, so that other people out there at the front of the room can have more information and more knowledge under their belt to provide their students with, aside from that which is typically taught in 200-hour trainings. Yeah, so bridging the gap. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Lauren Howe, and I don't know why I'm here. No, but really, I'm not a fitness professional. I'm not in the fitness realm. I mean, I've grown up an athlete, and I've been a fitness person my whole life, but my world, I guess, and I love that you said bridging the gap, is actually, I say I bridge the worlds of technology and entertainment, and sorry, science and, this is why I need more coffee, science and technology, and then entertainment and media. I've kind of fallen into the media side and entertainment that I'll be touching on a little bit later, I guess, on the whole identity and managing that, but I've never felt so out of shape in my life than walking into this conference today. Like,
we can help you with that.
This is my motivating factor. But yeah, so a bit of my background is I'm actually an industrial engineering graduate from the University of Toronto. Halfway through, I got a job in sports broadcasting with the Toronto Maple Leafs. And then I just kind of the past few years, I've been bouncing back and forth that now I work in technology. I'm a producer for a documentary series. And I'm a correspondent for City TV, one of our local radio. I'm like, how many people here are from Toronto? All right. Oh, okay. It's like I'll admit it. Okay. Yes. And yeah, so that's me.
Great. Well done. Yeah. Hi, my name is Will Greenblatt. I'm also kind of from Lauren's world. I've been an actor my whole life, basically since I was 7 years old, and I worked in film and TV. And then when I went to theater school at the National Theater School of Canada in Montreal, and hated it so much, just had the worst time. So I quit acting and I traveled, I went to Spain, and then I started a business in China, and I got into entrepreneurship and teaching, specifically teaching English. And so now I came back to Canada and I put it all together, the acting, the teaching, and the entrepreneurship, and now I run a company called Out Loud Speaker School, which is actors teaching public speaking skills and communication and empathy training. And we work with a lot of fitness professionals, and I've worked with Julian in 2.0 many times, and there's a great fit because as fitness professionals, it seems like you guys understand the necessity of always learning, always improving yourself, always, you know, trying to learn from different disciplines and different mindsets, which is kind of how I approach the work as well. So yeah, thank you for having me.
Hi everyone, I'm Tyler Sammy. I've always been driven by my athletic and creative endeavors, and with that, a desire to find ways to improve, but also to explore new ways to really understand the world around us. Our bodies are kind of vessels, but our minds can take in all sorts of ideas and concepts beyond our physical means. So that's led me into a pretty educational realm and a exploration realm. I'm the technical director at Thought Cafe, which is a motion graphic animation studio. We focus on factual and educational content. There's a show on YouTube called Crash Course that we're pretty proud of, just passed 1 billion views. We do television work as well as documentary work. It's really important to us. And then the other side is Future Talk, where it's all about kind of educating people about and with emerging technologies like augmented reality, virtual reality, mixed reality, projection mapping, a lot of terms that are starting to come online right now, and I'm really excited to share with the world as well as talk to other people and figure out how we can best utilize these tools to improve the world around us. It's great to be here.
Good morning. My name is Insvani Bafo. The easiest way to describe what I do, you can call me a business coach, and I specialize in relationship management. I work with big companies like Good Life Fitness. I manage a downtown portfolio for personal training, companies like Camfit Pro, Lifetime Fitness, but also boutiques, small gyms, and independents as well. And I came into this business after a long career in athletics. An injury stopped that train. October 11, 2005, 7:13 p.m. in upstate New York.
No.
I'm getting over it slowly.
Clearly.
But what ended up happening is I had to have two surgeries to repair a break in my leg. And it actually, my injury was a blessing because I was on the wrong path for a lot of things in my life. And to hit the stop button and rebuild from a tissue point of view, a mental point of view, and a spiritual point of view truly was a blessing in my life. And that's what brought me into the world of fitness and health. However, being a former athlete, I came in as a competitor, and meaning I'm going to be better than all of you. And before you know it, my scope and my ability to help people literally was shrunk down to how many hours I had in a day. And one day, one of my very influential clients said, how are you ever going to get to the level of influence that you know you can get to if you don't learn to manage people? And that dropped a spark, created a fire, and now that's pretty much where I spend a lot of my time. I'm still a coach. I'm still on the floor a few hours a week, but I'm coaching the relationships between associates, business partners, ownerships, entrepreneurs, and clients.
So thank you for those quick introductions, guys. It's great to have just insight on what you do and how it influences and intersects with this conference too. So thank you guys for taking that segue. So we're going to go into our rotating moderator now. So I'm going to have William come on up and just kind of moderate, take the floor, and ask some interesting scintillating questions.
So, as I said, I'm an actor, so first thing I'm going to get you guys to do is do a warm-up. So speaking is a physical act that comes from Kristen Linklater, who is like the voice guru for theater around the world. She has a book called Freeing the Natural Voice, if any of you are trainers and you want to figure out how to do that better. But I'll take you through a very brief warm-up, so if you guys could just stand up, I'll show you how this works. This is a very abridged version, but there's so much more we can do. So to start, kind of along the presence of mindfulness, just feel your feet on the floor and kind of check in with how everything's feeling from the ground up. So how are your feet feeling? How are your ankles doing? Is there tension? Is there some kind of tingling, hot, cold, any sensations you can notice? And especially regarding tension and engagement, how are you connecting to the ground? When you're public speaking, the ground is where you get your confidence from. It's how you step, it's how you connect with the gravity and how you feel secure in what you're talking about. And when people are not grounded, you can see it in the way they step and kind of dance around. But really important to check in with your feet. Take a nice deep breath and let it out. Let your attention travel up through your legs. Again, noticing the tension and engagement in your knees, your calves, whatever what are the front muscles called near your shin bones? What are those called?
Tibialis
anterior. Check in with your tibialis anterior. See how those are doing. Check in with your quads and your hamstrings and your glutes and your hips. How are those feeling? Are they tighter than usual? Is there any pain? And again, you don't have to do anything. This is just mindfulness. You're drawing attention. Take a nice deep breath in. And a nice deep breath out. Good. And travel up through your torso with your attention. This is where your sound comes from, right? This is the breathing and vocal mechanism. The basic journey of that is breath equals sound, and then sound equals speech. So take a nice deep breath, fill your torso. And as you breathe out, this time do this. Good. That feels good, doesn't it? One more time. Waking up the voice. That's great. Let the attention travel up through your neck and your jaw. We want no tension up into the head. And open your eyes. Now what we're going to do is this. We're going to activate the voice a little more. Everyone do this. Good. And one more time. Good. I like to shake my face out. I like to slap myself in the face. You're basically trying to activate everything. Wake up. This is what I do before any meeting, any big presentation. You're really trying to activate the muscles in the face, the body, and the voice so that you can optimize your performance, just like an athlete does when they warm up. Next is the face. The face is so expressive. It helps tell the story, so you want to wake it up. So we're going to do an exercise called big face, small face. Big face is like this. Small face is like this. Good. So big face. Small face, big face, small face, big face, small face, big face, hold it, and small face. Good, shake it out, slap it again, good. Next, we're gonna do tongue twisters. First one, you guys probably know this one, Unique New York.
Unique New York.
I can't hear you, Unique New York.
Unique New York.
Good, put some voice into it, Unique New York.
Unique New York.
Good, three times fast, I'll do it, you guys repeat. Unique New York, Unique New York, Unique New York.
Unique
Unique New York.
That's all right. It's fine. Next one. Red leather, yellow leather.
Red leather, yellow leather. Red leather, yellow leather.
Okay, three times fast. I'll do it. You repeat. Red leather, yellow leather. Red leather, yellow leather. Red leather, yellow leather. Go.
Red leather, yellow leather.
Okay, it's fine. Next one. How now, brown cow?
How now, brown cow?
Good. This one, you want to open the jaw, let the sound come out. You're not generating the sound in the throat. You're generating it in the torso, in the diaphragm, but you're letting it echo through the throat. So we're going to go, how now, brown cow?
How now, brown cow?
Good. Next time, do it like a big Shakespearean actor who's doing way too much on stage. I'm sure you guys have seen this, right? Somebody who's doing way too much acting. How now, brown cow?
How now, brown cow?
Good. Last one. Blow the roof off this place. How now, brown cow?
How now?
Good. Very good. Very good. Sit down. Thank you, guys. Thank you. No. Okay, good, good. So you feel how you're more alive, there's more blood rushing, there's more energy already in the room. This is what you can give yourself. If you're giving a talk, if you're working with a client, if you're doing a presentation, if you have a big job interview, big meeting that you want to get the energy up for, you also want to dial in. There's something very physical about this movement that makes you present in the room and think about how your body's working, how your voice is working. So just give yourself this gift of getting ready before you have a big talk or a big client. So, pardon, sorry? Yes, exactly. It wakes you up. Like, it works better than a coffee. I mean, I had a huge coffee before this. And this, what I did just now, was way better than that. So my first question is going to be for Tyler, our tech guy. You know, a lot of us talk about mindfulness with yoga and with the work that we do and how to think about your body and being present in the physical work that we do. As a tech guy and as an educator, how can mindfulness be integrated with tech, or probably how can tech be integrated with mindfulness? And an example of that would be from an educational perspective. There's a lot of research that shows that handwriting is better for memorizing than typing. There's something about the kinesthetic action of writing by hand that's better for memorizing. Mm-hmm. So can you speak to that a bit?
Yeah, I think what's really important as technology becomes more and more immersed in our lives, we often forget that these are just tools and how we're going to use them.
Right.
So it's easy if you're getting lost flipping through Instagram streams, maybe you're not being mindful.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of really cool technology coming out. The Muse headsets are really great EEG readers. So while you're doing meditation, you can be using that connected to your phone, and it will be tracking your brainwaves so that you have another way to review how that session may have gone. Of course, if that's distracting you from your meditation, then maybe we're not using the tools correctly. The handwriting thing is a really cool thing, like, and I like to do that as well. There's some really cool pens that will also be recording audio, so you can review back and be digitizing what you're writing. One of the things that's great about notebooks is that, but have you flipped through your notebook trying to find that one thing before? Searching your database of notes is much easier way, much more efficient way to get to recall some information.
Great.
So it's. I think that's one of the most important things with mindfulness, in particular in technology, is to make sure that as we engage with more and more technology in our lives, make sure we're using them in a mindful way. Try not to become subservient to it or forget about the purpose that these tools can provide to us, and let's try and maximize the opportunity they can provide to us as humans and within our environment, and not allow them to dictate the flow the other way.
Great. Yeah, that's a great answer. Does anybody have anything to add on or to ask Tyler?
I thought what would be an interesting point is the feedback that you get from the data, the collection that you get from technology. I feel like that enables people who may not be fully in tune and with themselves, that could be an opportunity for them to see numbers and again, provide more feedback so that they can be more in tune and interpret all the information that they're receiving, so that when they put themselves out there, it becomes like a better, a more synchronous experience.
Certainly, especially we know there's different types of people, that some people are very visual, some people like to talk, some people see numbers and things like that. So I think technology also can be great at a way of kind of converting or displaying information to different ways, to different people, to allow them to connect with their body, with their minds in ways that maybe they're, you know, it takes a lot of time to build up a meditation practice to really understand and to get into sort of flow states and calm states and things like that. So if we can utilize our tools to help us advance, that way, then I think we're utilizing them in the best possible ways.
Great. And one thing I want to add too is if any of you are working on your public speaking or presentations and you want to rehearse, a lot of my clients are fitness professionals and they don't know where to start. Like, how do I rehearse for a presentation, or how do I get better as a coach? A great thing is just film yourself. Film yourself and watch it back. It sucks. Like, everybody hates watching themselves on camera. But if you do it and you get through that initial thing of, oh my God, I look terrible or I sound terrible, whatever that is, it just gives you so much great information. And that's tech, using tech to get better and get that outside feedback.
Yeah.
That's great. My next question is for Paluna. So a lot of things I notice when I'm coaching fitness professionals is that there tends to be this tension that exists in the upper body and even in the hips as well. And it basically looks something like this. And everybody stands up here and they go, hey, this is my talk. And there's a lot of stiffness and they can't get out of this very muscle-bound kind of manner, which makes total sense, right? That's what you're doing all day. That's going to be the kind of body and movement that you're cultivating. But is there a movement practice that you can suggest to how to develop more freedom and fluidity in this kind of area? Because from a public speaking perspective, you need to be loose up here to be more expressive and to connect to your audience. And this tends to signify too much tension to be a good sort of, body language on stage.
I believe that the way you move your body while you're not on stage represents where you are in your mind, in your life journey. So there are two things that I could think about that are not a specific movement. One is allow yourself to be silly. In the fitness and entertainment industry, there is this constant search for perfection and to look a certain way because we want to be recognized in a certain way. And understanding that nobody is perfect, and at the same time, we're all perfect in a way. So just remind yourself that being silly and allow yourself to make mistakes, it's okay. That will take that weight off of, I have to look like this and my hair has to be like that and I have to stand tall and my shoulders back. But if that makes me tired, if I wanna talk to you like this and I feel more comfortable, you'll probably feel like I'm comfortable.
Yeah, right.
The second one, it will be referred to that, is to try and expose yourself to as many forms of movement as you possibly can. So if you're constantly moving in a certain way, that means your mind is also kind of trained in that specific way. So they both go hand in hand, putting yourself in situations where you are uncomfortable and you're forced to get out of that discomfort and come out the other side is the same way you're going to do it when you are speaking. And then the last one is to ask yourself, what's the worst that could happen? So you stand in front of people, and what's the worst that could happen? I will probably spill this water. I've done it many times before.
They throw tomatoes at you.
They throw tomatoes at you. So how do I get out of that? Or what's the worst that could happen? I spill the water. I say sorry. Somebody helps me clean it up. We move on.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, okay, that wasn't so bad. What's the worst that could happen? In my case, I teach a lot of certifications and a lot of big workshops. And English is not my first language, in case you couldn't tell. And my biggest nightmare used to be having to introduce myself. I could teach the topics. Once I get over them, my name is Paluna, and I do this, and I do that, I'd be totally fine. But the introduction used to be like, I was so self-conscious, people are gonna be wondering what my accent is from, and they're just thinking about how I look. Why is her? Is she from Spain? Is she from Italy? I had this whole dialogue about how people were more concerned about my speech than what I was trying to say. So then I got out of it and I was like, I'm from here. I speak Spanish. I say some words in a weird way because I'm not from here. So I'm learning. And then we move on. Mm. So kind of like, how do you say, grabbing the bull by the horns or something?
Yeah. You nailed it. Well done. Yeah. Great. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Fantastic answers. I was going to say, too, to the point about diversifying the type of movement you do, I say it's the same thing with the content that you watch. If you're always watching sports broadcasters, then you're going to get that kind of Max Kellerman, Stephen A. Smith way, going like, so this is what you gotta do. Like, you know, those guys are yelling constantly all day. And I work with sports clients who have that volume and they're completely unaware of it because all the content they're consuming is people yelling at each other. American sports broadcasters who just, their volume is at a 9 at all time. Even if they're like, I liked the soup at the restaurant last night. They're just yelling. And yeah, so diversify the content that you take in and you'll be able to also communicate in a different way. Same as the movement. That's a great, great point. Lauren. This question is about communication as maybe part of a minority group, whether it's a language minority or a gender minority or whatever the case may be, where you feel that the way the group is communicates and their mannerisms may be different from your own. And when you find yourself as a minority in a certain field, and your example would be maybe women in STEM, how do you view that from a communication perspective? How you communicate with the sort of big group? Do you have to change mannerisms? Do you have to adjust? Do you have to rough tune anything? Do you feel like it's better to just stay as authentically you as possible? Is there even a conflict there? How do you view that?
Yeah, and just to even dive into this kind of relates, may not, who knows, whatever. We're gonna talk about it anyways because I got the mic. But to the point of your physical self, the way you're sitting, the way you're standing, the way you're speaking, the way you're projecting yourself is, I had one acting class. So another kind of fun fact about Lauren is I fell into the world of like pageants, the whole Miss Universe, world peace, the US and Iraq and such as, like, I fell into that because I was looking for a scholarship and just fell in love with the community of supportive women, which is the like anti-stereotype of what that is. But I won acting classes, and at one of those classes, I was like, I used to have perfect posture because in the back of my head, I'm like, ooh, this is like ab training. Whether I'm driving, whether I'm sitting, I get to like, ooh, I'll brace my abs. This is my workout. And one of the coaches stopped this group session and looks at me. He's like, whatever you're doing, stop that. And I was like, I'm literally doing nothing. He's like, no, your posture being too perfect is making others uncomfortable. And it was one of the most fascinating realizations I've ever had. So I consciously now, if I'm going into a meeting where I'm supposed to be relatable with someone else, like even what I'm doing right now, I'm going to lean forward into the table, roll my shoulder forward, lean into something. And it feels very antonym to, especially in the fitness industry, right? Like what is proper ergonomics? How should I be standing? How should I be sitting? But sometimes in a conversation, you kind of have to literally break that down and consciously break it down. Mm. So that's just kind of like a fun add-on to the conversation before. But in regards to branding as a minority, which I feel incredibly uncomfortable saying as a blonde white woman, but you know, I've been a part of the smaller group when it comes to women in sport, women in STEM, and I will easily say that one of the unhappiest times of my life was when I was competing at Miss Universe, because it was one of the few times that I felt I had to conform to what this idea of what I'm supposed to be is, which is ironic because it's in the one environment where it's like, you are not the minority. You fit the definition of the stereotype. But I felt I had to be that certain way in an environment that's actually judging you, and versus when I kept my authentic self in STEM, in an engineering program. I think everyone craves authenticity in today's day and age, whether it's in consuming it in media, when we're for so many years, especially now I feel with Instagram and this idea of perfection, we're just fed constant bullshit. And I don't know, like we can say that on your podcast, right? But it's true. And so when someone finally comes out and says, you know what, this is how it is. This is how, like, and it's relatable and it's life. And this is what you're going through. I think that's, you'll always find your tribe of people who will relate to that. Mm. And if anybody's going to be a dick and go against it and like kind of judge you in that way, I think in today's day and age, there's so much more of a powerful voice to stand up to those who are saying, this is what you should be doing.
Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. Great answer.
It was really long. I'm sorry.
No, that's great. That's really, really interesting. I was going to say just to that point and also about the swearing and authenticity. Like I've been told a couple times I've done workshops down in the South in the States. And people come up to me after and they're like, hey, I loved your workshop. I just wanted to let you know you kind of cursed a lot. And I was like, yeah, I'm Canadian. Like, I mean, not all Canadians curse, I guess, but
that's right, bud.
I swear a lot, you know, and To me, what I said was, I would rather swear, piss off a couple people in the audience, and have them leave feeling offended, than compromise what I feel like is the way I want to express myself. And I think that should also apply to everybody else. I mean, if you want to say something, say it. And say it, I mean, as clearly as you can and as respectfully as you can, but don't censor yourself in order to try to fit in, is I guess the point.
And I think there's a little bit of that middle ground, especially in today's day and age where, you know, everything's recorded and people get like, you can be attacked online.
Yeah.
If you say something that's considered out of line, but as long as fundamentally you have a good heart, you're saying it out of a respectful place, et cetera, you just kind of have to own what you say. Mm. There's always going to be somebody who probably doesn't like it. I mean, shoot, the number of times, like, I've barely said anything, but you see it in media, you see it in, from, like, in press conferences, which is ironic of what this feels like, that you got to own it. And there was a better point I wanted to make there, but I don't think it matters for the sake of time.
It's great. Thank you so much. Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you, guys. I'm going to take my seat as the moderator.
Moderator, who's up next?
Cecily.
Coming. Hi, everyone. So I really wanted to pick the brains of really everyone in here regarding how we are now able to connect with each other and with those who we work with and also those who our work impacts that we might not even be aware of. In my experience, I'd say over the last 2 years, it was about 2 years ago where I said to myself, you know what, I am going to start focusing big time on social media. And prior to that point, I hated social media. It felt like a duty. It felt like something that I just had to do in order to try and have a business. And I feel like that's something likely some of you can relate to, right? And so I started looking to people who I admired in that space, like people whose accounts I actually got something out of, and asking myself the question, like, well, why did I enjoy that post? Or why is that post sticking with me? Or why am I still checking that person's stories? You know, what is it about that that is feeding something in me that feels beneficial? And once I started noticing how I could treat the word engagement differently, so not just liking and commenting and following being like these empty terms, but more so actually engaging, asking people questions on their posts, telling people why something made a lot of sense to me or really helped me and how it really helped me. So that then I was all of a sudden making, it sounds strange, but I was making friends with people all over the world who I otherwise would never have met. And through that level of outreach and connection, I found myself then being invited to come and teach in different countries, in different cities, in different parts of the world. And I am just one person who really has nothing all that much more unique to share than anybody else in this room or in this building. And yet I was getting the invitations because I was willing to connect. And I find that this is something that in my day-to-day Toronto life feels somewhat lacking. Connection here in a big city. I think we've all heard that kind of rhetoric before around, you know, living in a hugely populated area and never being so lonely, right? And so I think now my interest has turned to, like Julian was saying earlier, how can we take the ways that maybe it feels easier to connect? Like there's a safety being behind a screen, right? To like reaching out and saying things there that maybe you wouldn't be as comfortable saying to me right now in this room, right? That maybe you want to comment or send me a DM later, but like I'm right here right now and we can have the conversation together, but it doesn't always happen that way. So how can we start to think about our connection, think about our outreach, think about the way that we can change other people's, or just like improve other people's experiences in this industry in a way that is meaningful and lasting, so that we can start to think about connection in a way that really holds a lot of weight and isn't just pressing the like button all the time. So I'd love to hear kind of from those of you who come at this in different ways. So like Enswane in terms of like people management, Will in terms of like the people you work with, I'm sure come from so many different worlds and how your skills are helping them to then help other people and just like, bleh. And I mean, Julian's sort of, we're sitting in this right now. It's like, hello, connection. So whoever wants to go first, just jump in.
If you don't mind, I'll jump on the, jump in on this. I feel exactly the same way you did for many years of social media. I would be flipping through pages and looking at screens and like, oh, look, like, what is this, right? And I have a friend that's, he knows how to get messages through to me. And he ran me through a string of questions. He said, you don't like social media? Nah, I hate it. Why? Oh, there's all these phonies on here and people who are just fronting for the gram. And he's like, okay, and do you feel that there's people in real life that aren't like this? I'm like, yes, there's so many people out there that don't take 100 pictures and curate them and put them up. They're just regular people. And he's like, so why don't you just talk to them? And I hate being wrong, but I was definitely wrong in that moment. So to bringing it together, that was a struggle for me too. But when I started just sharing what was going on in my life and the things that I love, genuinely love, with no type of expectation of what kind of engagement I'll get back or if someone will like it or just put it up, see what happens, and actually reply to people and unfollow people that aren't really giving you the things that you want in terms of content you're viewing. I always say for every blue person I'm gonna add, I have to add 4 or 5 people I really know. Because I love Kevin Hart, but I have friends that I haven't seen in a few weeks. I wanna know what's going on with them. And by doing that, what ended up happening, to tie into the earlier question, was start realizing how impactful you can be just by being you. And in our industry, specifically, if you follow me, which you can, you're gonna see.
Like right through there,
subtle, get those followers up, right? But if you do, you're gonna see consistently the same things. My son, my wife, some fitness stuff every once in a while, me having some beers, watching football, fast cars. That's what I like. And specifically for my wife and my son, and my future kid that's coming at the end of the year, woo. Thank you. I just found out it's a little girl, so I haven't slept since. But for our community of fitness, I don't need to put up ab secrets or tips. Someone's doing that. Yeah. I don't need to put up, you know, this gym opening, our workout's better than yours. That someone's doing that. By me just living my life in downtown Toronto, as a homeowner, as a father, in this space in fitness, that's enough. Yeah. And if I wasn't doing that because I was too worried about sometimes the ills of social media or the stuff we don't like, then I'm kind of leaving out a community. Mm-hmm. So it's an amazing question, and it's one that I think if we sat with it a little longer, there would be a good balance. And through that, I actually learned to actually appreciate a little bit of the cheap, fast, and dirty stuff as well, because mm-hmm. I'm getting filled up in another area.
Yeah.
So I'll look at your 6-pack ab videos. You got great abs. But I'm not looking at it with anger like I used to, because right. I'm also getting filled up from other areas and other avenues.
Yeah, and I mean, I didn't mean that we have to also keep this strictly to social media. So if you have other ways, anyone in here, you're also welcome to add, those of you in the audience, of like ways that you have found to connect with other people and to also be fed, like what you're speaking to also talks about how you're being fed by other people as well. Yeah, well?
Yeah, sorry, I'm gonna grab that. The thing you mentioned about like working with people from different worlds and how to connect with them, a lot of the work that I do too just naturally goes pretty deep because it's about how people view themselves. Mm-hmm. Like with public speaking training, some people have really, really intense anxiety about it. And a lot of that comes from childhood, it comes from past traumas, it comes from really, really deep down important stuff. And so the way that I try to just connect with them first is I just share my stuff first. Mm. Just put it out there. And a lot of the time, what may feel like oversharing in connection, in person, is actually a really beautiful way to open the door to some pretty awesome conversations and some pretty deep connections. And what I realized after going through some shit in my life is that everybody has a story, and, yeah. and like everybody has gone through really difficult things. And if you just share yours or share a piece of it, if you're not comfortable going the full way, amazing things happen. And now when I, you know, like start a workshop, I'll just tell a little story about a really tough time I had with some performance or something, or some. I'll just share that I have anxiety, and then all of a sudden people just open up and they tell me their stories.
You're a human?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And I, just literally by sharing that I suffer from anxiety and depression, people will come forward and tell me their thing, and then all of a sudden you're talking at this level that you don't always get to, and it's like, oh, the weather's hot outside, you know, like.
we don't do that all the time. So by breaking down the wall of, again, as Paluna said, trying to appear professional, we think that being anxious is unprofessional,
mm-hmm.
when really everybody goes through it.
Yeah, yeah. It's reminding me of, because I've, in this sort of last 2 years of me figuring out how to connect with more people, I read a lot and listened to a lot, and so much of that was about this idea of story. And I, like you, was sort of in that in-between space, like, okay, well, what stories people want to hear, and how do I not overshare, and who cares about me? These are just me stories, and I don't want to be seen as a narcissist, and, you know, all those things. And then someone said something to me that really stuck with me when I was in a headspace. I was like, oh, I don't want to say that again. I've said it so many times. Everyone knows that by now. I don't need to talk about having a back injury again. And he said to me, how many times have you watched your favorite movie? Or, like, just the movie, that storyline that you like. Mm. Like, My Best Friend's Wedding, for me. So lame, but it's true. And it's like, oh, yeah, if it's on TV, I'm going to watch it. Because I just like the story, and I know how it ends, and it's not news for me, but something about hearing that story connects with a part of me that I like connecting with. And when people who are in my world are coming to me for some reason, and then they know me on a level through stories that connect with them, it takes us to a level that is real, that is human, that is connection, that is not just voyeurism through, you know, like the blue check marks situation. Yeah.
I was curious just to get a quick gauge in the room. How many people here use social media?
What do you mean use? Already. Like use as in consume or use as in
either.
As a...
So consume is one. Leveraging it as a business. Trying to even. Yeah. Well, yeah. It's, okay, so this is relevant for you guys. There's so much value, and I'm kind of repeating a little bit what everyone says, of quality over quantity. And people have, like, chased after, how do I get big numbers? I still have people asking me, like, how do I grow it? How do I grow it? And it's like, it's not about growing it. It's a portfolio. It's a first impression portfolio. And I even joke sometimes, whether you want it for a business or even, like, dating. Like, I hate if someone has ever found my social media ahead of time, because it's what we do. We look at somebody, we take the first impression based on what we see online. So it's always something, and even for someone listening to this podcast, of just always keep in mind, what do you want people to see about you?
And
not about the
number. Doesn't have to be perfect. Like, it's intentional. Like, I have on Instagram what you might call an ugly grid, meaning I don't curate it.
Oh, it's my biggest pet peeve.
To look like a quote every three posts or all against. It's
Do you
an,
use
it's an
the
ugly
same
random,
filter?
I never time? Remember which filter I used last time. But, you know, it's like, how can we reorganize our priorities around the why of what we are trying to accomplish? And I think that, just to kind of bring all of this full circle, it wasn't my intention to use social media just so I could get trips and go to different countries to teach. It was to meet people I otherwise would never have met. And then in those environments, like when I'm teaching in Ireland or when I'm teaching in the States, or next year I'm gonna be going to Australia for the first time to teach there. And when I'm in that room with people and I feel like I am in a room of friends, of people who know me and who I know, and we are able to relate and connect on a level that, like, by the end of our week together of training, everyone's in tears because it's just like, how are we not coming back together tomorrow? That to me is what it's about. So that's what I really wanted to emphasize in terms of connection, and that was what really also surprised me as far as what was possible when it comes to figuring out how you can really have an impact and be more than just a face on a screen. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. All
right.
Tyler, you're up, man.
What's up?
Yeah.
How's it going?
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. So I'm just moving this little camera around because it's about time and space, so I can move the space now and can watch this later and be in a different time.
Yeah, I forgot to say... I forgot to talk about the theme of what we're kind of all coming together on. I kind of rushed through that, but I thought time and space is a continuum. It has spectrums from the past, present, and future. And so I asked these guys to curate some of their thoughts and ideas and answers on the time spectrum as it relates to space. So it's pretty out there, but Tyler, take it away.
I love time and space. I'm reading a book right now called Art and Science, and it has some real cool like time-space graphs that just look pretty to me, because it's like, how do we travel? How do we traverse the world? It is always time and space, whether it's a post you made before, you're making a plan for later. You want to hop?
Who's the author of that book?
Oh, I don't know. I can take a picture later and send it to you. Anyways, so I've always been driven by curiosity and creativity, creating. I like wonder. I like wondering about what's really far away or what's really close and what's really small. And I like blowing people's minds too and showing them things that they've never seen. It really brings joy to my face to see somebody come out of, say, their first VR experience and be like, holy crap, that was nuts. Or watch my brother play Beat Saber for an hour and a half and beat all my high scores. What's really cool is if you look at technology through the ages, it's always gotten us to this other jump of time and space, whether it was etching pictures on a wall and somebody could go in and be like, I guess there's some buffalo around here or something like that, like leaving those messages, to writing on scrolls and sending them with pigeons over to somebody, and then we had Morse code and phone calls. So there's always this element of capturing and then communicating, sending it out. People talk about watching television for the first time and the moon landing, like this idea of being on the moon, and it was black and white and really small, but it all of a sudden opens up ideas in what's possible, what we as humans can achieve, or what we haven't seen yet, what we haven't explored. We continue to progress along that path. Movies and music and entertainment continue to get crazier and crazier and touch on all sorts of different stories, different human connections as they become more gentrified or decoupled from power. So things like, we all have crazy cameras and smartphones in our pockets that we can shoot high quality videos on, edit them, and post them. We can make our own movies. There's these kids in Nigeria making crazy movies with one green sheet and some really old crappy computers that take them forever to render, but that stuff used to cost Hollywood millions of dollars 20 years ago, right? So as the technology increases, the ability for humans to tell their stories and connect with other humans in different levels continues to increase. And what's really exciting to me as a guy who's in R&D and also loves to use these tools to educate, because I find education is, again, another one of those ways. Doing something for show is cool, but if you can teach somebody an idea or a concept, then they can do more with that idea than you ever thought you could, or ever you know that you couldn't. And we're at this next big cusp coming up that involves immersive media. So, you know, people like going to the movie theater for that big screen, that big sound. It feels like you're there, but you're still sitting in a chair and that guy behind you keeps making stupid jokes. Sorry, this is me sometimes. Can pull you out of that experience. At the same time, you know, we get glued to our little screens, our little phones, and you develop this and social media, we're connecting with people, but we're also separating ourselves depending on how we do it. And what's cool is like, I'm recording there with that little camera. A few years ago, my buddies were developing 3D 360 cameras and investing hundreds of thousands of dollars. You can get that for $500 now. You can get bigger ones for more money or less, but it's all getting cheaper. And there's two cameras on that. And what's really cool about two cameras is that's how we see. So watching a video is cool, even if somebody does a POV thing. It's like, oh yeah, it feels like I'm there. But it's not. You're still watching it through this little thing. Now, I have a little screen in here, but with some lenses, I put this on my head, and I watch a video with two things, now I start to feel like I'm there. The two eyeballs give you depth. That's how we feel close to something. That's how I know he's that close, and I can reach out to you guys. When we start to, and as these technologies' resolution improve, you begin to be able to connect with people in different ways through this recording. Maybe I want to go to one of your trips, but I can't make it because I got something here. Maybe I can hop in a camera in a live stream like that and feel like I'm there for a little bit.
being able to traverse time and space through digital means opens up the opportunity for us to connect with more and more people in more and more ways, which opens up our opportunity to share. We can share about health and wellness. We can play games. There's a lot of people losing a lot of weight because they would never exercise. But you play Beat Saber as a lightsaber music game. All of a sudden, an hour later, dude's been working out. His heart rate's up. He's feeling good. He's excited. He's happy. These things open up opportunities for people to explore realms that they didn't know existed. You can go small. Let's learn about our bodies by going inside our body. Let's do a little magic school bus action and feel like we're in there and look around. Let's go to space and play around on and play volleyball with zero gravity. Whatever you want to do, whatever we want to do, we can figure it out. So with that, what are some technologies that maybe don't exist right now that in your dream world, and it probably might even exist, that would help you either in your personal life, or your professional life, or in your goal to improve your health and wellness, maybe? Anybody? Yeah, you want to go? Yeah.
What you just mentioned, I was like, I didn't even think about that, but yeah. If there was technology that allowed people to be in the room without being in the room to attend a training where what you're training is something physical that I can't teach you to teach yoga without being in the room with you and seeing how you teach yoga. Mm-hmm. But maybe there's a way to gradually transgress that understanding and move into a realm where it does become possible. But the other thing I had in mind also was less to do with a technology that is cameras and ways of capturing what we're doing, experiences, but also in terms of communication. And we get caught up a lot in wanting to create online forums and ways people can, we have an online course, and so when people are communicating with each other, it's through Facebook, through a Facebook group, and we have more and more people who are becoming concerned with data privacy and not wanting to be on Facebook, but not wanting to miss out on the course that aspect of the training. And so how can we start to offer people that experience where you're still able to share photos or upload videos and have that level of engagement that mediums like Facebook have perfected without having to also let them own everything that we're putting in there?
Yeah, and that's a great point. And data privacy is one of those big things that, again, as we transition into these digital lives, feeling comfortable with the people that own it. Essentially, Facebook's free, so we're the products, right? Like, that's what they are doing this for. Demanding from them that there is accountability to the information. And ideally, like, the way I see it, to transcend to these next levels where we can gather more information about our bodies through cameras. There's machine learning to motion track ourselves so you actually feel the presence, see people moving. I'm talking right now. We use our bodies to talk. Being a digital avatar that's, you know, still and walking around is cool. But when I was playing ping pong with this guy who was in Japan two nights ago, you know, I was seeing how he was moving, and we weren't speaking the same language, but I could hear his grunts, and I knew he was pissed off when I beat him. Well, he won, I was pissed off. But I think that's a really big thing, and that's something that we haven't got there yet. There's a reason why people are scared. Some people just give it away, but the more that we can glean from our information to learn about ourselves, the better. We're not all going to maybe own those servers. That's going to require big data, big power. So that's a good question. How can we create environments where we feel comfortable sharing that data so that we can learn as more than ourselves and more about ourselves? I don't have that answer, but those are the questions we need to be asking and be sticking to the Googles, the Facebooks, the Apples, about keeping it safe and opening it up. I'm tired of seeing the same ad for this thing I bought last week, right? So maybe you should know my credit card info, so that you don't give me an ad for something I bought already, because I just find that annoying. It's pet peeve.
Just two things regarding data privacy, and I feel like I could do a whole other talk on this, is DuckDuckGo. Yeah. If you've never heard of it, has anyone heard of it here? Everyone? Well, all your searches remain private on DuckDuckGo. So if you are someone who is concerned about like privacy, safety, being retargeted with ads, use DuckDuckGo over Google. And I'm in a partnership with Google right now, so I don't know if I should be saying that. But like, it's more so like, hey, I'm supportive of Google. I don't care if I'm going to get targeted for ads for things I care about and I'm clearly searching for. But for those who are concerned, that is an option. Yeah. And the other one is Watch the Great Hack on Netflix. Mm-hmm. So it's all data is a currency now. And like I said, I'm going to stop and not talk about that too much because that wasn't your question originally.
It all fits.
But a just kind of fun thing to dive into. We joke back to your question of what technologies do we want now?
Yeah.
In like could apply for health and wellness is, this is applied for everybody. I want something to manage my emails. Like an AI that's going to filter my life and like a personal assistant and algorithm, not related whatsoever, but just a personal pet peeve. But with health and wellness, it's incredible now. Take what you will for how you want it to apply, how you want this to apply to your lives. But with this new immersive experience in technology, two of my favorite use cases are for doctors who are now practicing certain surgeries through mostly VR rather than augmented reality. And then another one is you have documentaries that are being filmed and shot in 3D. To make you feel exactly the way someone will feel, and there's a really powerful example. It's like the first ever VR documentary. I forget entirely what it's called. It's a short film. I highly encourage everybody to kind of check it out because you can kind of get a sense of what it's like to be fully immersed in there. And I think we're going to start to see health and wellness trends move in that direction, especially now where people are creating, who was I just talking? Was it Cicely? Yeah, like those who are creating online programs to reach a larger audience. Like there's going to eventually be even to CanFit Pro. Is there going to be one international conference one day where people tune in remotely and still feel like they're present? And just, I think the possibilities are limitless, and it's just a matter of doing the digging and applying it to your life, and that's how you make money.
Yeah, and empathy is a huge thing. Putting somebody in somebody else's shoes to feel like they're there can really create a next connection and bond. Does anybody in the audience have a dream, a way that they think technology could like give them an easy win?
I have something.
Yeah, Julian.
How about smell-o-vision?
Yeah.
Can we try that for like Food Network? Have they investigated that? I feel like there's the senses that we're tapping into will roll out sooner than later. Mm-hmm. So the more and more we can put our senses out there on technology and provide ourselves that feedback that touches all the senses, then we've almost disintermediated our sensations to what's currently around us now, but to things that we would never be able to experience beyond the world that we live in here. And that's like Ready Player One. That's like an avatar sort of lifestyle where you get to experience everything that your avatar experiences on all senses. So maybe seeing our movies come to life and experiencing ourselves within the movies on all spectrums of our senses.
Yeah, and let's just make sure that we continue to be aware, educate ourselves, and push towards a path that's it's going to be a bit more of a utopian movie that we're aiming for, as opposed to the Terminator kind of sequences. Though the bubbles in the Matrix thing, they look pretty comfortable. I don't know. They look soft.
Tyler, can you figure out some tech of putting, like, sorry, my face has been excited this entire time, of putting, like, a 360 camera on Julian when he's doing an Iron Man, and somehow I can feel what it's like without actually doing, because I'm never physically going to be able to do that?
Yes. Yes, we can do that.
Oh, my God.
We can do that today.
Simulate the pain.
The pain.
Yeah.
That's just you slap you after.
Right.
Yeah, and until we have all the haptic suits and all that stuff, make sure you give people hugs in real life and stuff. That's really important, too. Anyways, I hope that was inspiring to people and just putting things on the radar. Also, Firefox web browser, Mozilla is an organization that's focused on the user, so they never sell your data, and they're creating the web standards to improve for us, not for advertisers. So that's another quick plug there. Anyways, thanks for your time.
Woo. Lauren.
Oh, that's me. Sorry.
Zoned out, Matt.
I swear, I'm going to try to make mine speedy, because I know we're cutting it on time a little bit, maybe. TBD, it's all right. Wicked. I've already been doing enough talking, but a little bit of why Julian called me here today is to talk about, and correct me if I'm wrong, identity, managing personal identity,
which is something I've kind of struggled with for a long time. I think it's natural for all humans to be interested in multiple things. And growing up, it's also kind of funny from the way I'm even speaking right now. I feel whenever Julian speaks, he brings me down to like this calm state that I never actually achieve in real life. And then whenever I'm with him, I'm like, let me speak calmly. It's amazing. I don't know what you do and what you have, man, but you got to package it and sell it. It's great. Now, for me growing up, it's like you get told what you should be doing. I'm popping on the mic here. I'm going to stand back. And there's never one answer. There's never one path. I think every single person has their multiple definitions, and that's okay. You don't need to be one thing. And for me, I started to get told advice as I got older and older. It was like, well, pick a lane. Decide what you want. And I think there's some truth to that. But I wouldn't be where I am today had I actually picked a lane and said, I'm going to do this one thing. Because life is about experimentation. And it's about finding the things you love and pivoting from it. Not saying, I picked this one thing and I love it, so therefore it's the only thing I'm going to do. No, pick the things that you might be bad at, and then you can experiment with it, pivot and figure out what you love and don't love. And that's been my journey, where I fell in love with science and technology as a kid. And then I fell into the media side. And kind of the world kept pulling me back and forth, that now I've accepted both. And managing that identity, I still have people asking me, and going back to the branding conversation, when people pull up my Instagram, they're like, yeah, but you gotta tailor it. You gotta manage it a little bit better. Like, what are you? Are you fitness? Are you tech? Are you like lifestyle and fashion? I'm like, I'm whoever the hell I damn wanna be. And that's a personal choice. I choose to put myself online in aspects of my life. I like keeping parts of my life private. And I always will, but that's a choice, where choose what you share, what you don't share, whether it's online or whether it's in person with other people. You are the multitude of what your identity is. And always, the one other kind of piece of note that's been a pivot point for me is, and Julian knows the entire backstory, but I had a little bit of a mentor give me a harsh talking to recently, where essentially he said, it was kind of more in a negative light. But the golden nugget of truth that pulling out of it was, what is it that you're doing and creating in the world? Every single day, are the decisions you're making changing the world? And it sounds cliche and it sounds over the top, but you notice when you start falling into that spiral. And he kind of made a joke saying, you know, I saw a segment the other day. You're milking cows on breakfast television? What are you doing? Are you changing the world with that? I'm like, no. Well, sometimes it's entertaining. Cardi B, I love her. She's entertaining. Oh, like, is she changing the world?
Kind of. With Bernie, yeah.
In her own way. But a part of it is, again, looking at it with different perspectives. Is she's owning her truth and, like, whatever, being herself. And I'm a fan. No shame. So with that in mind, I've now pivoted my brand. Damn. I've pivoted my brand entirely to say, the content that I'm putting out there should have a good message behind it. And without going into my own stuff, I want to now turn this over to you guys with that kind of preface. Starting with Cicely. So we started chatting earlier, and especially in something like yoga, there's often stereotypes, overarching things of what being a part of a certain community entails. And with yoga, that might be mindfulness, presence, giving back to the community. And you can speak to that far better than I can. But at the same time, in order to reach a certain level of people and in order to survive and live, you need a paycheck at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And there's a business behind it. So how do you find that balance between the stereotype and the reality?
It's a tough one. And I think it's one that I wasn't able to navigate comfortably for a long time. It's really only recently that I started to take ownership of what I'll call needs in terms of the needs I felt around how much I wanted to be able to earn and also what I needed to be able to do to feel like I was making a difference and having an impact. And in order to have that impact and also in order to earn the living that I wanted to be able to enjoy, I knew that I had to operate a business. I wasn't the type of person to fall into the yoga world in a way where I wanted to be kind of like that stereotypical ascetic, sacrificial, living in a cave type of practice. I found yoga was my way to help other people, and now I don't really even teach yoga. I teach people who teach yoga how to do other things. But it's, again, coming back to that theme of connection, where if I'm able to connect with other people, then to me, that is the purpose of what I'm doing. And so in order to connect more effectively, I can't make it just about withdrawing from society into the more esoteric realm of yoga, but more so how can I bring what actually is the definition of yoga, to yoke, to connect, to come together into the world in a more meaningful way.
I love it. And something, wait, were you going to say something?
I said amazing. amazing.
Agreed. And Will.
Sorry, let me add to that. Amazing. It's amazing because I feel the same way in my role in personal training. It's you do it because you want to help people. Nobody ever entered this business because, hey, they're making a ton of money over there, I want it. You go in to help people, and you go in because it gives you so much purpose to see how that person reach their goals. But you have to make money. Like, you're not going to be a good coach if you don't sleep in a place that's comfortable, and you're not eating well, and you can't take a vacation, and you can't take care of your needs, and even sometimes your wants. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we sometimes fool ourselves to think it's noble to not want those things. Like you said, sacrificial.
Yeah.
But then who really wins? If I'm out sick, what happens to my people who come to my classes? If I'm not happy, what happens to my following? And showing up for those people, it could be sometimes, you know, we see with our clients and our network, they need it. So a day off is, we need it too, but when they're out, it could be bad. It could be bad news for a lot of people who are still trying to find their way in the world of their own personal body and fitness. So amazing is what I should have said.
Actually, I'd love to even expand on that point, because even for you, you've grown and expanded far beyond one-on-one training, yet you still keep that as a part of your portfolio and with that connection. And Cicely, you and I were even talking about this earlier. Sometimes with one-on-one training, you are 100% going to be capped at the number of people that you can touch. Right. So where's your balance in that sphere?
Yeah, great question. It starts for me with like an ideal and a purpose and really sticking to that. Like, I actually want to help as many people as possible. And you're right, if I cap at 18 or 30 hours or 40 hours, I'm no longer living in alignment with what I actually want to do. The gap between what you want to do and where you are is usually something that really, really sucks. So for me, it was like, I have to get better at working with people. I was the type of person that says, we're doing it now and I'm going to push you to do it. And if you can't do it, you're not the right person. And that grew my network maybe 1.5. But that's still not growing, because now I'm excluding everyone else who doesn't think that way. So constantly learning to know different people and understand what drives and motivates them, and using data. I use a lot of predictive data that tells me a lot about my team. I say clients. When I say clients, it's the 153 trainers I work with, or the owners of shops, or that's what I mean by clients. I use a lot of predictive data to say what's the relationship to dominance? What's the relationship to extroversion, to patience, to formality? Because now if I know that, I can now use my own way of thinking, and then we can compare it in scenarios and find some sort of outcome that's going to help us move forward, which means we can expand or scale. There's a lot of tests that do that. There's a lot of things that show you things like Myers-Briggs and DISC and all that. But then sometimes that traps you into a persona. Well, this person's like this. Well, everyone said today, you're never one way all the time. I really thought I knew who I was when I was 17. I was really wrong. And if we're always changing, and life is changing, and needs are changing, expectations are changing, then no matter what you are as a personality, will always change as well. But it's being able to look at that and balance and know there's base needs and wants that everybody has. It's just about, now how do I actually get that through to you today, or you tomorrow, or someone else another day.
And I'd love to plug, you've created a personality test, haven't you?
You felt that, didn't you?
Maybe.
Well, actually, I license one, but I have a company called B Element, which takes on conversations like this for fitness professionals, client retention, sales, balance, really, having time for the things you love. Because if you're struggling in something in your business or your practice, chances are really high it's happening in your personal life as well. So if sales is something that you're not assertive with, it's going to hurt your bottom line, yes. It's going to hurt your expansion plans or your scalability plans. But it also means you're probably not taking time for the needs you need personally in your home life, in your relationships. So we cover all of that, but it's based on using some data and then using a lot of human experience and then really saying, okay, if this is the gap, let's not go left or right. Let's take it on until we get even a little better at it.
Mm-hmm. There's a quote a mentor told me once, and it's I love it. It's understand in life this formula. Know what you know what you don't know, and find the gap in between.
That's the secret of working with people.
So what's the name of this test, and when is it available?
Predictive Index is a test. The company I run is called B-Element. We'll definitely get you all set up. Yeah.
Cool. Not sure. Okay, so I have more questions then. Will, on the same note of connecting with people and communication, because I've done an acting class, I feel like I get to brag about that, but I'm nowhere near your level. There are certain things in acting that are applicable in everyday life, and essentially you've become a highly trained communication professional, because in acting you need to be present. You need to, those little nuances when you're watching a TV show, you're like, oh, they're a bad actor. It's because, you know, their facial expressions, there's minor things you notice that it's off with the timing and the communication. You know that they're not listening, they're waiting for their line, and it just looks wrong to our eye. Mm. But out of all the things that you've learned, what is it for non-actors that they can take away from the tricks and tips and experiences that you've had?
It's a really, really good question. It's hard to pick one thing. I think if there was one overarching theme, it is being present. It may be a boring, cliched answer, but when theater people talk about shows they've seen, like most theater is other theater professionals going to watch the show and then talking shit about it at the bar after. That's like all theater right now in Toronto. And it's terrible. And I'm a member of that community. For some reason, it's like it's this masochistic thing that we keep doing to ourselves. We put on these shows that require so much work. Nobody sees them, you know, in a relative measure compared to a TV show or a movie. And it's dead. Like, once it's over, it's over. And there's no way of using tech to be there if you weren't there. If you're not in the room, you missed it. And if you went on a shitty night where the actors were hungover, then that's when you saw it. And then, maybe, you know. But what theater artists say when they see a show is, that actor was so good. But they don't say good, they say present. That's the language. And that's the word that they use. Hmm. When somebody is really listening on stage or on camera, and they're able to filter out all the questions that we have of, as Paluna was talking about too, like, am I good enough? Do I look good? Do I look a certain way? Do I look like how I want to look? Is the audience liking what I'm doing right now? Is the other actor liking what I'm doing right now? Am I remembering to do that thing? Those are all thought processes that take you out from what you really should be doing, which is listening and reacting. Mm-hmm. Acting is reacting. You know, you can't just stand there and go, okay, I know what I'm going to say next. I'm going to stare at your mouth until my turn is, and I'm going to say my thing. That's not acting, right? You're literally, you may as well just, you know, have a robot up there. So the whole point is you have to find ways to be present. Mm-hmm. Mindfulness is an amazing one. Yoga is an amazing one. But just a presence of whenever you're doing anything. The big one I say is you can practice this every day. When you're talking to somebody, even in small talk, really check, am I listening to this person? And really see if you can hear more. You know, how many times has somebody told you big news and you go like, oh yeah, cool. And then you stop and you go, oh, wait a second, they just told me something huge. And I just went, oh, cool. Because I wasn't really listening. Or I was waiting to say my thing, you know. So I would say just really checking in and reminding yourself to really pay attention to what people are saying to you. Pay attention to what you're saying. Try to have a conversation that no one's ever had before. And see where that gets you. And making that a practice is really good. And the other thing is, I would say just as a quick add-on, I think being a child actor really fucked me up because I was always going into rooms as like a 7-year-old kid and being like, please like me, and doing this thing. And I sensed at a young age mm-hmm. that I had to make people like me. That's how I was going to be a good actor. You have to go into an audition room and make adults like you. And there's a lot of song and dance and, you know, performative aspect that goes in there. And it took me a long time to start to let go of that and try to be myself and not care if people like me or not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love what you said, though, with the waiting and listening happens all the time, too, in, like, everyday conversation where you just see. I feel like it's always at Christmas parties, and it's like you're just waiting for that person. You're like, my turn.
Yeah.
But
I'm gonna say my Netflix show after they're talking about their Netflix show.
Bingo.
Yeah.
I see Julian getting antsy, being like, "All right, I'm gonna stand up and take the mic from you now. Go. Okay. Bye."
So just to respect the time that we have, just gonna finish off. I have some questions, summarizing questions. Instead of summarizing with answers, I thought it would be interesting to summarize with questions. So. I thought of what you guys all said, and so I have eight things. Lauren had mentioned the word relatability. How can we better curate our own relatability to better connect? So with the intention of elevated engagement, we often expect too much out of the conversation, of the dance, of the other person. But at the end of the day, we can control what we can control. So your relatability is one of the first places you can start when it comes to better connecting with other people and how you curate that. Will, how can you be more aware of your nonverbal communication? Because that's a big part of how we communicate. Instead of what we say, it's how we move, how we showcase our body positioning. It shows a lot of who we are. And touching upon what Paluna said, how you are is most often a reflection of how you move and vice versa. Your mental states are dictated by your physical states. The deep question with some of Cecily's things that came to mind, are you what you do? And that's an identity question. Because who you are is often answered with what we do. A deeper question into the Czech world, who can you love becoming? But to go beyond and into what Lauren said, it's not just one person. We don't just wear one hat. Who are the people you can love becoming? As a father, as a wife, as a sister, as a career person, as a peer. There's so many identities that we wear that we have the ability to define ourselves on the range of who we all are. So who of those people can we love becoming, and how can we be more of that? With Tyler's speak on technology, connection can start with an education on the vehicles of connection. So what are you using to better connect with the people and the world around you? So instead of thinking about the content, but the context, how are we communicating with people? What's the vehicles that we're using? And can we put more education out there on those specific vehicles, like VR as in not just an experience, but as an education? So that leads to, instead of 2.0 creating connection experiences, how can we create connection education? That's the next level. In Swanee, how can your decisions always manifest a win-win-win? A win for I, a win for we, and a win for all. Paluna, what are you holding on to? What can you let go of? And how can you move forward by honoring the past while celebrating the present? This timescape. We hold on to things from the past, and we let those things shackle us down. We look into the future, and we let those things carry us away from what's now. But how can we honor the best of both, past and future, so that it can help elevate our present? And a question I was thinking about when it comes to sports and basketball. What kind of athlete are you off the ball? Who are you when you are not in the spotlight? Can we share more of that version of you? So being an athlete that anticipates and strategizes to make and create plays for the person that has the ball is the defining factor. That was how the Raptors beat Golden State. It's that they knew how to move into spaces. They knew how to create plays off the ball. They knew how to read others. They had emotional intelligence to the next level. And I'm sure other teams have that too. But if we can do more of that off the court, I think we've taken connection to, again, a much more applicable, practical way that transcends the worlds of business, career, life, and so on. And then one final question that we can all kind of write down and fill in the blanks in terms of identity, which is a focal point for 2020. So fill in the blanks. Because I'm blank, people think I'm blank, but actually I'm blank. It's a great question that I ask myself. Because I'm a fitness professional, people think I'm super rigid about diet and lifestyle, but actually I'm a foodie more than I am a functional eater. I love art and culture. I'm much more versatile, and I don't just focus primarily on training. There's so much more to life to live. So those are some of the questions that I thought would resonate with people and to us as well, and the people that are watching in the camera and listening in the podcast. We're a little bit over time right now, but does anyone have any questions for anyone of us up here? Or for each other?
Okay. One question for everybody here. So this is an amazing panel, amazing room. And there's a lot of purpose and intention in the things that we're doing, whether it's business, initiative-wise, ideas, charities. When you become 10 times, earlier my question was if, now I know for sure when you become 10 times, when you're 10 times more impactful, do you have the people ready to walk with you? And what do you have to do today to make sure? Because now I know for sure they're coming. Mm-hmm. You're going to need them. Mm-hmm. So what relationship things do you have to do today to be ready for when your impact is multiplied by 10? Something to think about.
That's huge. When I think of the future of what 2.0 is and what it was, I always think the successorship. I think that could lead to what you're talking about. Do I not only have a game plan, but do I have a plan to coach and help other people develop the programming and carry it forward, pass on the torch, that kind of deal? And at the end of the day, this journey today here to be at Camp for Pro is a closing of a chapter. I don't know what's going to happen with 2.0 in the future. We're putting it on pause. There's an ellipsis to the things that we do in terms of creating experiences. But what I alluded to was, how do we take experiences? Because we're living in the experiential world. Everything's marketing, experiential marketing, that kind of thing. It's just momentous. But how do we make that an education? And I think we're on that path right now. It's not necessarily going for the home, stepping up the plate and hitting a home run every single time. It's how can we just get on first base? Low-hanging fruit. What's in front of us right now? And that speaks to what's here and what's now. And this here is that representation of all that was from before until now. And now that we're here together, what do? Like Cecily is saying, like, hey, I'm here now. Let's talk. Let's do something. Let's plan something. So just a hint of what I'm thinking about is connecting with civic leaders, cultural leaders in our city and internationally to take this and put it on a stage that helps amplify the energy that you feel here today. And that's my role going forward, is instead of being the actor in the spotlight, stepping back into the director chair and maybe doing a little bit of both, like Clint Eastwood, for example, writer, director, producer, every actor, everything. He does it all. So that's kind of where my mind's at when it comes to this future. So yeah. Thank you guys so much for coming. Appreciate your time.
We have shirts.
Thanks, Julian.
Free shirts. I want to give you a shirt. I would love to give you guys a shirt, just because it's a nice, comfortable shirt.
It definitely is.